the metaverse is going to be very beneficial for online retail. It's also going to be built in a lot of ways on the blockchain too. So a lot of these themes kind of have some underlying ties, and we want to be there because we think this is kind of really disrupt the way we work, the way we spend our money, the way we, you know, spend our free time in the next 5 to 10 years. And that's why we offer these types of products, to not have to be right about the individual stock. It's kind of hard to pick the right stock, but it might be, we think, a little easier to find the right theme to, you know, complement an existing core portfolio exposure of the traditional S&P 500 companies.
Hey, Chris, how are you doing? Good to have you on the show. How are you doing today?
Doing well, Ed. Thanks. Looking forward to having a nice discussion about all sorts of topics today that are definitely in the news, seems like every week.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an eventful year still this year. It doesn't look like we're not around the corner yet. Volatility is picking up a bit again. But where are you calling from today?
So I'm in Colorado Springs here in Colorado, just south of Denver. So a little chilly. We're still in the winter season. And although we're supposed to get 55 degrees today, 5 inches of snow tomorrow. That's Colorado weather for you.
Do you go skiing or snowboarding, something else?
Yeah, I sure do. That's one of the benefits of being out here for sure. And we've had some great snow, and, you know, a little bit different than some of the other climates in the world. I know like Japan and some of Europe has suffered a little bit, but here in Colorado, we've had a great year for snow.
Yeah. And you've been in the finance industry quite some time, in particular been involved with ETFs. Especially from the beginning of a lot of first-to-market ETFs. I was just wondering if you could give us a brief overview of your background, including maybe some of the ETFs that you brought first-to-market.
Yeah, I guess, my career started back in 1997 in the 90s with an asset management firm called First Trust Portfolios, which is, I think, well-known here in the U.S. and even in Europe and other locales. And really spent my career working in the asset management business, creating, you know, investment strategies, access to investment segments through a variety of vehicles. Since 2005, it's really been focused in the ETF space. So, you know, I've had the privilege to work with a variety of different partners and experts that have allowed me to be part of launching many first-to-market ETFs. And by that, just really, we mean, you know, the first ETF to offer access to, you know, a unique investment segment. So the first solar ETF, TAN is the ticker there. The first cybersecurity ETF, HACK is the ticker there. The first blockchain focused ETF, Block is the ticker there. Those are probably, you know, three fairly prominent examples of what I'd say leading edge package product efforts to provide access to ETF investors to these unique themes. And we continue to do so here at Amplify, where we're continuing to push the envelope and launch innovative strategies and segments that really haven't been available to ETF investors before. We're really focused on that because we think the ETF itself offers a lot of efficiency, transparency, flexibility for investors. And, you know, that's more important than ever with markets being, fairly difficult, at least in the last year and a half.
Yeah. And how big is Amplify today?
So we're about $4.2 billion of assets under management across just over 15 funds here in the U.S. And we have some sub-advised funds in Hong Kong and Korea with our strategic partner, Samsung Asset Management. And we continue to build. We'll probably add another half dozen products or more to the Amplify ETF product suite here in 2023, and maybe do some other things overseas as well. So we're in growth mode, and really see this time as a great opportunity for us to kind of expand not only our offerings, but kind of the unique selection that we provide in the marketplace.
And how do you go about you and your team, but researching, creating these new ETFs? What's the focus there? How do you know there's a market for it? I suppose you try and get things, like you're saying, first to market in certain areas when you perceive there's demand there for this sort of area.
Yeah, it used to be kind of easier, to be honest with you, because, you know, when I first launched my first ETF sponsor back in the mid-2000s, I think we were the 14th ETF sponsor in the United States. And at that time, I remember speaking to a reporter at the Wall Street Journal, and they said, you know, Christian, you're launching 14th. Don't you think you're late to the game? And, you know, we were looking at kind of the ETF space and then comparing it to the mutual fund space. And in the mutual fund space, there were, you know, hundreds and hundreds of mutual fund sponsors, and there was over 5,000 mutual funds. So we really felt like the ETF space, with only 14 sponsors and that time under 1,000 products, was ripe for innovation. Well, you know, today there's over 200 sponsors here in the U.S. We're right around the top 30 in terms of assets under management at Amplify, and there's, you know, over 2,000 products that are in the marketplace. So there's been a lot of firms that have brought kind of first to market products, and that tends to be a competitive advantage if you can offer exposure to an investment strategy or segment first before the crowd. But, you know, that's fleeting nowadays. So, you know, in 2018, we launched our blockchain ETF, we're first to market with it in terms of being actively managed strategy. You know, today there's roughly 20 ETFs in that peer group competing with our block ETF. And we still remain the largest ETF, but it's definitely more competitive. So, you know, a couple of tricks that we use are really kind of watching what strategies or segments are emerging in the marketplace that investors want. You know, it could be individual investors and some of the themes they're focusing on, or stocks or industries they're focusing on. Sometimes it's even sub-industries. It could be on the separate managed account side, where institutions are providing managed account access to unique segments or strategies that aren't in the ETF space. It could be maybe a hybrid of a couple strategies and putting them together to make a ETF and make it more convenient for investors to access. So we look at points like convenience, market demand, recent performance, kind of behavioral bias in the market, a lot of different kind of ways. So, you know, this past year in 2022, it was really tough, for example, to, you know, bring new growth strategies to market because growth was really out of favor. So that really pushed product development focus more into, you know, what were investors looking at, what segments were appealing. So we focused more on, for example, high quality companies or companies that had strong balance sheets and dividend yields. So, yeah, you know, we launched an international high quality, you know, dividend product. We launched a natural resources income product. So some of it also depends on kind of what the market mood is. So there's not really a secret. It's more just kind of being aware and interacting with the market, talking with market participants, and then hopefully we get it right and select the right partners, whether it's an index provider or sub-advisor, to execute on that strategy within our product line.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Block, your blockchain ETF. I took one of the stats from your investor prospectuses. The size of the global blockchain market is expected to grow from 17.46 billion 2023 to 1.43 trillion by 2030, which is just like a huge growth target there. So take us through the ETF, the objective of your ETF, and how it's sort of trying to gain along with the growth of the market.
Yeah, so blockchain is, you know, we think kind of a foundational transformative technology that, you know, could have the impact of something like the internet. You know, the internet was a foundational technology which different businesses later on, you know, kind of built on. So can't have a streaming business or a digital ad business without the internet. Now, most of us discovered the internet back in the day because maybe we got onto email and then we realized email was built on the internet, or, you know, perhaps we saw a website for the first time and realized, oh, it's built on, you know, the internet technology. Well, blockchain is kind of similar. Many people don't really know blockchain on the retail side, but they know cryptocurrency. They've heard of, you know, Bitcoin, they've heard of Ethereum and all these other tokens. They've heard of NFTs. Well, these are all applications simply built on blockchain technology. So back in 2017, when we filed to launch Block, we were looking at the space kind of well ahead of, we think, mainstream investors and seeking to design a way for ETF investors to kind of capitalize on blockchain technology, which includes applications like cryptocurrency and other things we'll talk about in a minute. You know, we looked at the application of, you know, creating that investment in an ETF and really we consider doing an index-based product or an actively managed product. And, you know, an index-based product, there's very many efficiencies involved with it, but there's a certain rigidness when you look at an index. It has to have rules. It has to have right criteria. It has to have normal rebalancing of that portfolio based on those rules. And we really felt like the future of blockchain was pretty unknowable in terms of how quickly it would change all the applications that would come out, and wanted to be very responsive for that. So we went the actively managed route with Block and have portfolio managers that are buying and selling securities, you know, as frequently as on a daily basis. And they're doing that all transparently in the ETF. So the premise of Block is to own companies that are actively engaged in blockchain-related business activities. So this could mean everything from producing equipment that is used for blockchain, you know, proof of concept or mining, to having a venture capital or financial or payment business that utilizes blockchain technology, to be doing investment banking with blockchain-type companies. To actually owning indirectly Bitcoin. We actually have some spot Bitcoin ETF holdings in Block, fairly minimal. So kind of the premise of Block is not really to be a crypto ETF, it's to be a blockchain-focused ETF. And yeah, while crypto is very important, there are so many applications we think for blockchain. Blockchain really creates that trust that's needed in a digital world to verify data very quickly, and really to expedite all this data that we're kind of awash in now in 2023, and it's only getting, you know, more robust. So blockchain, we think, is going to apply to many industries. And, you know, at some point, we may look back and say, cryptocurrency was interesting. It's sort of like email or what websites were to the internet in the 90s. But we never envisioned some of the other applications like streaming and digital ads that have become key drivers of kind of the internet economy. I think there's going to be some of those applications that emerge here in the coming years for blockchain, which we can talk about.
And is there one application of blockchain that's most exciting to you that you think is going to really get traction first before the others?
Yeah, I think one of the probably the more promising aspects is, you know, digital payments. You know, now, in the U.S., I think we're not as sophisticated in terms of what many other countries face around the world, especially emerging markets and poorer countries from an economic standpoint, and kind of the dynamic that they're faced, either transferring money to relatives or paying when they don't have a bank account. You know, in many of the emerging market countries, more people have smartphones than they have bank accounts. They're unbanked. And blockchain allows the ability to make digital payments and digital transactions very quickly and inexpensively. And I think that is one of probably the biggest global use cases for blockchain, to be able to make payments really frictionless. And I think we'll see more and more countries, including the US and China, create kind of these blockchain systems that allow their currencies to on-ramp to these digital payment platforms. And, you know, gone will be many of the middlemen, which are these, you know, banks and money transfer agencies that take a significant cut of the transaction and really hold it up sometimes for 3 to 5 days. So I think that's going to be a major area going forward. We need more regulation, and that's coming. That's healthy for the blockchain space, but see a lot of promise in kind of the transaction digital payment area.
Yeah, I agree. That's probably one of the biggest areas. They've got that problem to solve related to tax as well, when you actually pay for something in crypto. But these things are coming, I'm sure. My next question was just about how the constituents are sort of chosen for the fund. Is there any sort of criteria they have to go through? And related to that, as you mentioned earlier, how are they then actively managed going forward?
Yeah, so essentially, you know, there's an initial universe of companies that have to be engaged in blockchain, either, you know, participating in kind of the ecosystem by actually, you know, producing product or services and revenue, or investing in the space and in terms of a publicly recorded investment, or potentially even partnering or being involved in multiple research consortiums that suggests their kind of interest level. And then the portfolio managers really kind of look at each one of these companies that qualifies and kind of determines the bucket they fit in. And there's a variety of buckets that the portfolio manager kind of sorts all these blockchain companies in. Let me go through kind of these really, I would say, seven key buckets. You know, first is really transactional. These are companies that are, you know, powering transactions on the blockchain. Think of like a PayPal or, you know, like a Square. Private blockchain are companies that are essentially developing blockchain technology as a service for other companies to go in and then use that blockchain within their organization. So that could be like an IBM or an Accenture. Then there's the application companies that develop kind of some of the software on top of the blockchain. There's venture firms that are helping really fund new blockchain businesses. They're doing investment banking. There's conglomerates that have, you know, blockchain as a unit of business within their overall portfolio because they're, you know, quite large entities. And then, as many people guess, there's the mining companies, companies that are focused on kind of mining and Bitcoin and, you know, doing proof of stake as well. And then there's also, you know, kind of exposure companies. So these would be companies that have a fair amount of, you know, Bitcoin on their balance sheet, like a MicroStrategy, for example, would qualify. Or it could be actual spot Bitcoin ETF exposure that gives you indirect exposure to kind of the movement of Bitcoin. So there's these variety of segments that the manager kind of allocates to. And a lot of that allocation depends on kind of where, at this point, kind of where the crypto market is trading at. So if you want to be more defensive, you know, based off where the crypto market is, say it's in a kind of a bearish turn or a winter, which we saw a fair amount in 2022, you're going to invest more in the private blockchain companies, the payment and transaction companies, companies that are really kind of the underlying pipes of kind of blockchain. These are more like corporate entities that you would kind of maybe initially go, well, I didn't really know they were involved in blockchain. Accenture, IBM would be a great example. Maybe a PayPal or a Square tangentially. On the flip side, you know, when risk on really comes to crypto, you know, in general, the portfolio managers try to own more of the high beta names, which would be the mining companies, some of the semiconductor companies, et cetera. So this is really kind of a, you know, a risk managed approach. It's a balanced approach. When you look at the peer group of ETFs in the space, there are, you know, crypto equity ETFs that maybe just kind of focus on the mining companies that are very high beta, both good and bad.
Yeah.
And then there's kind of the blockchain ETFs that really have lower volatility and have a risk managed approach. Then within there, there are rules-based index products that really maybe only rebalance, you know, twice a year or four times a year that are pretty static in nature. And then there's these active products like Block that really try to kind of read the market and make allocations based off, you know, the segments there. So it's a dynamic product. It's been successful, had a positive return since its launch back in 2018, which, you know, you take for granted. I mean, I think we launched and Bitcoin was around $18,000-$19,000 there. And, you know, it suffered through that first winter when, you know, Bitcoin went down to 3,500 and, you know, rode it up during the time where we, you know, went past 60,000 and then certainly rode it down. But this is, I think, a great way to own a regulated investment company. This is a 40 Act ETF that's traded on the New York Stock Exchange. BLOK is the ticker. We can only own publicly traded securities. So gives you a way to invest in regulated entities that hopefully will eliminate some of the risks or many of the risks of kind of this fraud that we're seeing in the space. Also eliminate some of the regulatory risks, we believe, of investing in general in the space. And this allows you to, you know, in your brokerage account or your retirement account, you know, have a 1 to 2 to 3, maybe 5% weighting to this space for kind of the long-term growth, really trend of blockchain, which again includes crypto, but isn't limited to crypto.
No, that's very, very interesting.
We hope you're enjoying the episode. For interviews like this every Thursday, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, make sure you give us a star rating and leave guest suggestions along with any other feedback in the review section. Now, back to the show.
Let's move on to some of your other ETFs because you've got a full range of thematic-based ETFs that are interesting here. One that's been around quite a while, the Amplify Online Retail ETF, also one of your biggest. I think we'll run through quite a few here. So let's just get a quick overview of this ETF.
So yeah, first ETF was our online retail ETF, ticker iBuy. And kind of the premise was at the time, the only retail ETF simply kind of owned the standard brick and mortar retailers. And we really felt like there's an opportunity to focus on companies that were generally focused on the online retail segment in terms of revenue and seeing the majority of their revenue come from online retail. So, you know, this is a portfolio of really three types of companies in the online retail space: traditional online retailers, so companies that are just selling, you know, their wares online, and then platform online retail companies, companies that, you know, provide a platform for others to sell goods and services online. And then there's an online travel segment, because that industry has really kind of emerged as a benefactor of kind of the efficiency and the flexibility of being online versus in brick and mortar. So it's roughly a portfolio of about 60 companies, equally weighted. So, you know, a lot of times people expect when they think of iBuy, they're like, oh, Amazon must be 24% of the portfolio. No, this is, you know, equally weighted. So you see a very flat weighting amongst companies as diverse as Amazon or Etsy or TripAdvisor. So a nice way to kind of play the emergence of online retail. Certainly the big year for this fund in terms of performance was in 2020, when we saw so many of the closures related to COVID. You know, it had a big year, you know, up 120-some% that year, because it was really one of the perfect environments. You know, 21 and 22 really saw kind of the return of consumers to brick and mortar, and you know, online kind of seeing a little bit of their market share kind of be whittled away after that big year of COVID lockdowns. And you know, year to date now, we're seeing kind of a return of investors looking at least higher growth companies, which benefits online retail and iBuy. So it's had a great start to 2023. You know, market share is still only about, you know, 13-14% in the US in terms of online retail sales relative to brick and mortar. So, you know, where could that go? It could go to maybe, we think, 20-25% over the next few years. So this is still a growth story. And, you know, I think we all know we're buying more and more things online, and that really helps companies in this portfolio.
Yeah, definitely during COVID, it's forced that behavior through, and it appears that it's sticking quite a lot, and that, you know, not all that retail that went online has gone back to brick and mortar after, you know, things have sort of returned to normal a little bit. Are there any other growth drivers there that you think? I wrote down things such as social media shopping hasn't really taken off that much yet, but it's, I know the, you know, Facebook and other platforms are looking into that space.
Yeah, so definitely in Asia, it's taken off probably the most. And we do have about 25% of our portfolio in iBuy that's international, of which, you know, around 10-15%, you know, depending on the rebalance, is related to a lot of the Asian e-commerce companies. So tends to be big over there. Probably one of the bigger trends, I think, coming, you know, in the next couple of years will be this kind of metaverse. And, you know, when you're in the metaverse, it's a lot easier to, you know, kind of transact online, almost maybe impossible to do it in store. So that trend of people living more and more in the metaverse, doing more interactions and shopping, I think will be beneficial. And again, you know, as the kind of emerging markets continue to see an increased standard of living and they have more smartphones, we think that is going to be a big driver as well. Of kind of online retail. Finally, you know, omnichannel. Many of the stores, the brick and mortar companies that, you know, suffered through 2020 increased their online retail investment and market share over the last few years. So these omnichannel players are going to be a big, I mean, Walmart, for example, is a top five, you know, online retail seller in terms of total sales. They don't currently qualify for our ETF because they don't have a large enough percentage of their revenue from online retail. But, you know, it's something we're looking at because these omnichannel players are doing substantial sales and that's moving their stock prices.
Yeah. And it's very interesting to note that you're introducing these new sub-industries as they come in, such as the metaverse. This is part of your research process, is it? You're constantly looking for new ways online retail is becoming apparent in different areas.
Yeah, I mean, Ed, it's really interesting to see how a lot of these, you know, are interconnected, right? So, you know, the metaverse is going to be very beneficial for online retail. It's also going to be built in a lot of ways on the blockchain too. So a lot of these themes kind of have some underlying ties. And, you know, we want to be there because we think this is kind of really disrupt the way we work, the way we spend our money, the way we, you know, spend our free time in the next 5 to 10 years. And that's why we offer these types of products to not have to be right about, you know, the individual stock. Let's say it's kind of hard to pick the right stock, but it might be, we think, a little easier to find the right theme, let's just say, to, you know, complement an existing core portfolio exposure of, you know, kind of the traditional S&P 500 companies.
Mm-hmm. So let's move on to your Amplify Lithium and Battery Technology ETF, BAT, B-A-T-T, I believe. What is it? What type of companies are inside this ETF? Let us know.
Yeah, so this ETF, our BAT ETF, is really about the electrification of fossil fuels. You know, a lot of that is happening, I think, headline-wise in the automobile segment, but certainly we're seeing kind of the world transition in terms of energy to cleaner, more renewable energy. And whether you're doing wind, whether you're doing solar, hydro, you know, you need batteries, you know, and that's kind of an interesting element that all of those technologies share, that when it's dark, that solar energy from the day is stored in batteries. When it's not windy, you know, the battery that's connected to those windmills still can produce and serve energy needs. So we think batteries are going to be big, and there's a lot happening in the battery space, I think most publicly with electric vehicles. So when you look at the ETF, it's an index-based ETF with about half the portfolio invested across the spectrum in terms of the metals and materials that are needed to create these next generation batteries. So, you know, the headline metal is lithium for sure. There's also exposure to nickel, manganese. There's some exposure to cobalt, which is somewhat controversial as a metal. So we're really trying to kind of own the underlying materials, because that's going to be good as, you know, more and more demand for batteries happen. That flows down to the material section, and those companies, those mining companies, we think are going to be well positioned. So that's half the portfolio. Then there's a 20% segment that's allocated to electric vehicle companies. You know, these are, you know, some of the biggest consumers of really batteries going forward. You know, we've seen, you know, some of the breakdowns of like a Tesla, and a Tesla, you know, takes, you know, a little over 4,000 iPhone batteries to power a single car. So you start doing the math there and understanding, as Tesla and all the major automobile manufacturers start to go, you know, 100% electric or even hybrid, the amount of materials and metals they're going to need is immense. And then the remaining 30% of the portfolio is allocated to the battery technology companies. So we've got the kind of materials and metals. We've got kind of the biggest end user, if you will, in electric vehicles. And then finally, these technology companies, they're really creating kind of the and optimizing batteries and kind of the software that also interacts with these batteries. So whether it's extending range, making charging times less, finding new ways to utilize batteries and motors. These are, you know, kind of the cutting edge technology companies. So make no mistake, this is a kind of a way to, in one investment, own kind of, we think, the future of electrification of fossil fuels and batteries. Fairly diverse portfolio, but it is a growth portfolio. So many of these companies tend to trade at, you know, above average PEs, not unlike many of the other segments we just talked about. So, you know, it's not a value portfolio, but we think over the long term represents some really attractive growth opportunities as the world, you know, starts to really change. Now, I think this is going to be over the next, you know, 20 to, you know, 40 years. But, you know, if that continues to happen, we think many of these companies are going to be well positioned to kind of ride that wave.
And out of these, there's numerous like sub themes there. Which do you think might have the most benefit from the rise of this? You know, electric vehicles is one of the biggest things here. Because, at least I've heard there's not enough lithium mined per year to match the potential demand of, you know, EVs that are coming up. So, you know, when there's scarce supply, the price of things go up, don't they? So what's your point of view on it?
Yeah, I think we do have a scarcity problem looming in the future, not unlike what's happened to, you know, oil and energy over the last, you know, 40 to 50 years. At times, there's just not enough supply for a variety of reasons. And yeah. I think we're going to see that in lithium and some of these metals. It's one of the reasons. So, you know, there's some estimates that say, you know, within the next 10 years, we might need like 7 to 10 times more lithium mined than what's currently being done. And lithium and all these metals, you know, they're not the easiest to mine. Many of these sources are in hard to reach areas, maybe in some cases geopolitically unstable. They take a long time to get up and running from a mining perspective, whether it's permits or infrastructure. One of the unique takes, because there are other ETFs that kind of focus in this area. You know, the reason we did not just own lithium in our mining segment and own some of the other materials and have the ability to own other materials is we do think that, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, and there is going to have to be some other materials, some other technologies, whether that's solid state batteries, et cetera, that are going to have to be developed, because we're going to hit a ceiling here fairly quickly in these metals. And let's face it, you know, the majority of these metals are today produced, you know, or controlled by China. And for U.S. investors or, you know, the U.S. government, that's an issue. And certainly that's why we've seen some of the legislation passed to try to encourage more of that type of mining here in the U.S. So it's going to be, I think, you know, an opportunity, but also a bit of a crisis. So again, we think this is kind of early to maybe get in before some of these dynamics play out. And to some extent, again, we think, you know, the companies in this portfolio could be well positioned in kind of a supply crisis, because there's going to be a bidding war for those supplies. And we're already seeing, you know, some of the major automotive companies try to lock up some of these supplies from the mines. And the, you know, the material prices are only getting, you know, higher and setting more records over time. So something to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah. Now let's move on to the cannabis ETF that you've got. Let's briefly just go over how it's actively managed, because I believe it is, and, you know, what sort of companies we see inside the ETF.
Yeah. So the cannabis space is another similar kind of space to blockchain, where it's very fast moving. There's a lot of unique developments and ways to invest in it that maybe are hard to predict going into the future, so hard to create an index around it. So we, you know, have an actively managed product, and the portfolio manager running it is an experienced investor and pretty public investor in cannabis, in the cannabis space, Tim Seymour from Seymour Asset Management. And, you know, he really is in touch with, you know, many of these companies, whether that's management or being part of the ecosystem. And he's going in and looking at not only kind of the applications, business applications of cannabis. So we know cannabis, you know, has the ability to potentially disrupt a variety of different industries, whether that's, you know, the pharmaceutical industry. There's a lot of research being done on sleep, anxiety, PTSD when it comes to what, cannabinoids, THC is only one of them. And there's, you know, over 100 cannabinoids that have been identified, and THC is probably the one that most of us know about. We know we've heard of, you know, CBD, for example, but many others being researched. So pharmaceutical industry could maybe see some disruptions. We see, you know, kind of the recreational use, whether that's the alcohol industry being disrupted by, you know, cannabis. Then we also see, you know, also kind of for pain and inflammation, CBD being kind of a very popular product or additive to lotions and creams. You know, some of the biggest users of that are retirees. You know, who would have thought that, you know, retirees would be pushing, you know, kind of this derivative from the cannabis market. So, you know, Tim is in there managing the portfolio and trying to not only find, you know, kind of disruptive opportunities, but also the right management team. You know, there's the cannabis space is a bit of a wild west. I think it's becoming better and better in terms of management teams and quality. But, you know, we've seen a lot of those companies kind of being weeded out, pun intended, over the last, you know, several years as it's become more and more of a mainstream business. We've seen a lot more regulations happen worldwide, and certainly more states legalizing not only medicinal use, but recreational. So, you know, in our portfolio, we have about a little over a third of the portfolio exposed to U.S. Companies in the form of MSOs. We have these swaps, if you will, that allow us to participate into the MSO space, which we think those companies are best positioned ultimately to benefit from what we view in the future as federal legalization of cannabis, which probably isn't going to happen in the next few years. But I think, you know, further out could be the big opportunity, certainly for kind of the industry. So it's a way to kind of have an expert, access an expert's thoughts, opinions in this cannabis space. And, you know, Tim's quite active in, you know, owning a variety of different companies and exposures, diversified way. Again, this is a area that we think it pays to be diversified and have professional selection versus to select one or two companies. A lot of kind of business specific risk in this space, given kind of the emerging nature of it.
Yeah. And do you think eventually many states in the US will legalize at least like recreational use of it?
That definitely, that's been the trend. I mean, every election cycle, we're seeing several states add, you know, cannabis legislation that is expanding really, you know, recreational use. Medicinally, it's kind of taken for granted now in the U.S., you know, recreationally, which, you know, started really with Colorado, but has expanded across the U.S. as, you know, the trend is growing. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, will that, you know, elevate into the federal level? And there's certainly been some banking kind of rules and regulations that have been considered off and on at the federal level for the last several years that would benefit cannabis companies. There's been some examination by the Biden administration about, you know, taking cannabis off Schedule One. There's been, you know, some legal reform talked about in terms of how, you know, cannabis is treated by the Justice Department. You know, there's even kind of what I call social justice kind of initiatives that have been explored in terms of how legislation may work with cannabis and, you know, granting certain types of groups that have been more exposed to the downside of cannabis historically, giving them the opportunity to have kind of more ability to create businesses around cannabis in the form of licenses. So it's all moving in the right direction. And I think probably the big kind of two, I think, motivators for the federal government are one, public opinion. These are politicians. And when they see that Gallup polls here in the U.S. say the majority of Americans want cannabis legalized medicinally and recreationally, that, you know, gets politicians' ears to perk up. And then second, you know, the taxation revenue that can come from this industry and regulation would be significant. And the U.S. federal government is always looking for more revenue. And, you know, the states have been able to, you know, do that and seen a nice bonus there. So I think that's ultimately probably what's going to push it over the goal line is that, you know, tax revenue opportunity, kind of all the infrastructure that gets built around that from a federal government perspective. So again, long term, the kind of the investment case here is, you know, could there be some disruption by cannabis of the recreational kind of alcohol industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the sleep industry, the anxiety industry, the inflammation? These are all really big use cases that cannabis could potentially disrupt. And even a few percentage market share in each one of those makes for a massive industry. And, you know, we're seeing it slowly crack with things like CBD, you know, and some of the state use figures that we're seeing. But really, when the dam breaks, we think is going to be kind of a pretty an outsized opportunity. So we think this is something that you want to have some exposure in over a long term. And, you know, we think the trend is your friend here. Just we're not sure exactly the timing of that trend.
Yeah, of course. So last, before we wrap up, let's talk about one of your most interesting ETFs in terms of how it's constructed, the thematic All-Stars ETF, which is a composition of numerous different themes into one ETF. Can you take us through the sort of investment philosophy and a number of the themes that you can get exposure to there?
Yeah, Ed. So, you know, if you're watching this or you're listening to this and you're hearing all these themes, and we have more certainly, and there's others companies that have more, one of the questions you have to ask yourself is, well, you know, what theme do I allocate to? How much should I allocate to? It can be kind of confusing. And maybe it's just not in your wheelhouse to take to, you know, research all these. Well, we heard that as we kind of built out our thematic product line. And we worked with a research provider called ETF Action, which had really this great construct. And the construct was, you know, what if we kind of crowdsourced ETF thematic ownership to tell us where kind of the most sophisticated investors in the world, ETF investors, are investing their assets across all the themes, and then dug down within those themes to find out what ETFs they were buying and what were the top holdings of those ETFs, and then basically deconstructed it to create a portfolio exposed to all of the themes, but weighted based off ETF industry ownership. So kind of this crowdsourcing, but not just any random crowdsourcing where people, ETF investors, are really placing their assets. So ETF Action actually sorts all the thematic ETFs into essentially seven categories: disruptive technology, which blockchain would fit into, evolving consumer, which like online retail would fit into, fintech, you know, digital payments, mobile payments, et cetera, healthcare innovation, some of the biotech, for example, industrial revolution, you know, things like potentially robotics, sustainability, some of the clean energy, ESG kind of focused ETFs, and then multi-theme. So it looks at these different categories, again, looks at the ownership of these categories by ETF investors, then looks at the ETFs most owned by those investors, and then looks at the underlying securities, and then kind of creates this index that really seeks to capture what the ETF industry thinks are the most important stocks representing the most important theme. So this is really kind of your, I don't care, I'm not going to take the time on which theme, I'm just going to kind of go with kind of the ETF industry's view of all themes. And I don't know if I'd call it the S&P 500 of thematic investing, but it is kind of this one-stop approach to be engaged in these themes. So, you know, if a new theme comes aboard and, you know, it owns certain stocks, it'll be captured, you know, in this ETF. So it allows you to not only kind of own the companies that in the themes that are most important today, but it dynamically adjusts on a monthly basis based on where ETF ownership is. So we think, you know, for those who don't want to figure out which four or five or eight themes they want to own to complement their core portfolio, MVPs is a great way to kind of automate that in a really tax efficient way in terms of owning it in an ETF and seeing it rebalanced through the creation and redemption process, the in-kind process on the ETF side. So unique product. With that being said, all these, you know, themes and growth products did not perform well, Ed, in 2022. It didn't matter if you were growth, if you were thematic, especially if the theme, not all themes are growth, but most of them are, didn't work well. However, 2023, you know, the market's flipped upside down this year, really from 2022, at least so far, maybe not today as we're recording this, but we've seen kind of these themes and these growth companies really come back and rally strongly. You know, I think, you know, last time I checked, we had like five ETFs that have tripled the S&P year to date. And, you know, most of those ETFs did quite poorly last year versus the S&P. But again, the market's flipped on upside down. So we think over the long term, you know, you need to own, we think, these types of themes. And you have to look at it probably for a 3 to 5 year period. You know, any one year, these can be quite volatile. Even though they're fairly diverse in terms of their holdings, most of these ETFs have like 25 to 75 holdings. So they're fairly diverse in terms of their individual stock specific risk, but they still are fairly concentrated in these themes. And, you know, all of them, at least that we talked about today, own, you know, their profile is, you know, high growth companies for the most part. So there are certain risks inherent in any concentrated strategy or focusing in a sector or an industry or a sub-industry or a theme. But we think those risks tend to be mitigated, at least the downside risks, over longer holding periods, because we do think these trends, you know, are very viable. And we think that they're not broken, for example, in 2022. Some people are like, are these trends broken? We think, no, we really just think they're on sale a little bit, given right. market dynamics. So again, we think these are important for investors to have some exposure to and really complement their existing core exposure. But yeah, MVPs is, we think, kind of a unique way just to own an automated tracker of the most important themes as defined by the ETF industry.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. I've read through it in detail. It was really interesting to go through it. And yeah, like you said, it's definitely, you got to wait for these themes to play out. You know, even the fastest growing business areas take time to play out. And if you can't hold it long term, then you're at the will of the sentiment of the market and how it shifts from, you know, year to year. Thank you so much, Christian. I think it's great to get an overview of many of the thematic ETFs at Amplify and get your sort of insights on that. Before we wrap up, where can people go to get more information about this and also maybe follow any of your sort of analysis or your team's analysis?
Yeah, so thanks for having me, first of all. It was great. I appreciate it. Love to have continued conversations on these themes. We also have a bunch of income-oriented products that have been quite popular. So to find out really more information, we've just scratched the surface. We have infographics, we have white papers, we have investment cases, we have videos, kind of anyway, we have podcasts or at least audio updates on our portfolios, or many of them. You can go to our website, which is amplifyetfs.com. You can check out our socials, Amplify ETFs on Twitter. We post content regularly. You can subscribe to kind of any of these funds that we talked about and their updates. Most of them have monthly or quarterly updates where we do portfolio attribution and a deeper dive. But we'd love to interact with you, you know, at amplifyetfs.com.
Awesome. Thanks, Christian. Have a great day.
Thanks, Ed. Appreciate it. Take care.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Just a quick note before we sign off. If you're looking for an easily digestible daily update on the markets, this might be of interest. Opto Updates is our short newsletter sent every day during the trading week, giving you a bulleted list of the top 7 stories from the global stock markets. We've done the hard work for you, highlighting relevant opportunities and trends. And in addition, we'll also keep you notified of any new products, stock reports, or webinars from the Opto world. If you're interested, sign up using the link in the show notes. And thanks also to CoFruition for consulting on and producing the show. Until next time. CoFruition.